This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Say yes to Pure Leaf tea and free gas for a year only at True North Convenience Stores. When it comes to quality, say yes to the delicious taste of real brewed Pure Leaf tea. True North stores are stocked with your favorite flavors like unsweetened, extra sweet, and raspberry. For a limited time, enter for a chance to win free gas for a year. Check the True Rewards app for details or download the mobile app from the Apple or Google Play stores. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to Jeffrey Wright and Company. My name is Jeffrey Wright. You can follow me on Twitter, on X, at JWright929ESPN. As always, you can listen on the radio dial 92.9 FM, 680 AM. But if you're away from the radio and you want to stay up to date with everything happening here on the station, download the Odyssey app. Free to download, free to listen. You can stream live anywhere. You can even listen on demand. Producer of the program is George Ruggiero. You can follow him on Twitter, on X, at KingGeorge94. George, good day, sir.
Good afternoon. How are you?
I'm doing well. And let's bring in our company live from the bowels of Bridgestone Arena, it appears. David Cobb writes about college football, college basketball for CBS Sports on Twitter, on X, at David W. Cobb. Cobb, good day, sir.
Hey, good day. I'm using a styrofoam plate as my microphone stand.
Love it.
So we're doing this on the fly, but man, we got a banger going on right now. Just down the hallway from where I am, Ole Miss and Arkansas going down to the wire. If Arkansas wins, man, this has been about as perfect of a start as the SEC could have hoped for, because the bubble teams have performed well to this point. And heck, I mean, Texas has got a shot against Texas A&M here in a little bit to creep the SEC towards potentially getting 14 teams in.
Yeah, that's a topic that I want to discuss with you, because I am very fascinated this week. And I'm not saying this is like some crotchety, you know, do these games even matter? I'm not even complaining about like the NBA. I'm truly fascinated to know how the committee is going to view these games. And that's something I want to talk about with Cobb. Also, we had Grizzlies last night. When did you comfortably feel like they were going to win?
Yeah, so I was keeping track of it from here at Bridgestone, and I wasn't comfortable. I mean, there was no comfort to be found until, I mean, even after Luke Kennard hit that go-ahead three, it wasn't until Ja hit the dagger.
Yeah, I agree. Even the four-point play didn't even make you feel like it. All that did was like, okay, I think at least they'll go to overtime. That's all that made me feel.
Yeah, their defense just wasn't good enough for them to get separation, because there was a little spurt there where like the Jazz missed a couple of layups in a row, and then Kennard hit a three, and the Grizzlies went up five, and I'm like, all right, we're going to put it on cruise control here now, right? And then they didn't. Like, the Jazz kept getting good looks, and that was concerning.
So we'll talk some Grizzlies as well. Eric Hastein going to join the program. We'll talk with him about the Grizzlies. Also, of course, it is Tony Allen week here in Memphis. Tony will have his jersey retired, or actually, I guess, yeah, jersey retired. Yeah, we stopped doing that record thing. That was so dumb.
Hey.
So dumb.
So I ran into John Hollinger yesterday, and he was like, you going to Memphis? And I was like, well, wait, what do you mean? Like, he's like, Tony Allen's jersey retirement
yeah,
ceremony. And I was like, I would love to be there. I have not watched the entirety of the YouTube, the Grind City production on him yet. But it's very high on my to-do list. It's hard this time of year, but I'm going to get to it soon, and I'm excited about it.
No, I'm with you completely. I've kind of watched bits and pieces. It's like, I don't know why, but it's like, I haven't, like last night, you know, Cobb, we talk about it. It's tough out there for us that have to watch every game. Like we got to lift those weights. This is why you put in all those reps. This is why you watch all the film. I took last night and used it like a simulated scrimmage or a simulated game. And I stayed up for Montana. Yes, I have Montana money line. Was that really the reason that I was staying up and I was trying to avoid disaster gambling? Maybe. But it was getting you in that mode of, all right, this game didn't tip till 10:35. I'm going to stay up well past midnight. I'm going to have to get up, get my daughter where she's supposed to go, and then I'm going to have to go to work. Like I was treating it like a tournament game. I felt like that was important.
I've gotten on the Celsius bandwagon here as of late. I'm telling you, man, that stuff is like liquid Adderall. I don't know how it's legal. Like, you drink one of those, and I mean, I drink one at like 11 a.m., and I'm still wired at 11 p.m. It's kind of wild.
So, does it give you energy, or is it just like it keeps you awake? Like, that's the other thing.
Yeah. Yeah, like, I feel like I can have a conversation that might normally exhaust me.
I'm going to have to check into this.
So here's what happened. So for my five-year anniversary at CBS, George, I don't know if you can do the applause, but five-year anniversary, I mean, that's kind of a big deal. Anyway, you know, shout out to me for 5 years. Anyway, I got 100.
Hey, way to survive a field that has nothing but layoffs and like, you did it.
Bro, I'm at the point in my life where I work somewhere and I'm like, the benefits are good. The health insurance is good. You know, people are like, are you happy where you're at? And I'm like, yeah, the health insurance, man. Yeah. Have you seen it? It's great.
Start adding a kid into the world, you're like, oh god.
Yeah, no kidding, bro. Those bills are piling up. But so anyway, I got 100 points, Paramount points, which are kind of like Schrute bucks. You watch The Office, right?
Yes.
So it's like Schrute bucks, but and with these Paramount points, you can go shopping. And what can you buy?
We have this at Odyssey too. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if as a part timer, I'm getting any Odyssey cash.
Yeah.
But,
I don't know. I'll try to send you some. We'll see if it works.
Yeah, put in a word with Brad to see if you can give me some Odyssey cash.
Yeah.
But I use my Paramount points to buy 3 cases of Celsius, which probably for my long-term health, not the best decision. But for the short term of March Madness, I was like, this is a must.
Yeah, the important part is this is still a great week. Like, actually, this kind of snuck up. I used to like the players in May, the players championship in May, a little bit better. Just because I thought it was a different test. It's fiery. It wasn't as, like, you know, the ball would roll out. I kind of like the rhythm right now. Like, this is conference tournament. It wets the beak. It gets you ready for March Madness. It gets you ready for next week. You throw in the players on top of that. While it's not a major, and I'm never going to stump that it should be a major, ever. Like, I'm very adamant. No, sir. It is nice to have, like, some golf on in the background. You're like, all right, most of the big names are there, except for the LIV guys. Like, I don't know. Then I have also realized, man, there's some guys with tour status that even I have no idea who they are.
Yeah, I hate that the players is this week, though. You could argue, in my world, this is the busiest week of the year, even busier than the NCAA tournament is.
Sunday's a disaster for you.
Yeah, it is. Like, and I don't get to watch the players, which is such a great event. So I'm disappointed by that. But alas, we'll soldier on, Jeffrey.
Yeah, we'll keep watching sports.
Those who are employed in sports media, right, our lives are quite tough.
We do it for the people out there that can't. You know, this is our public service. All right, so actually, let's start with college hoops, because this is something that I really am very fascinated by, and we won't maybe have an answer until Sunday, and I don't even know if trying to make a generalization based on what we see on Sunday, I don't know if it'll hold true next year. But I am of the belief that once upon a time, you really could change your circumstances positively or negatively during the conference tournament. But the numbers that I've seen and the examples that I've seen, I've gone back and I've read your boy Chip Patterson. He does the snubs piece for CBS every year.
Mm-hmm.
And you go and you look at it and you realize, man, conference tournament week, it's like, unless you won it and then all of a sudden you went from bubble to on the bracket, man, it's it's really not meant a whole lot. Like, the one of the best examples I can think of is last year, Virginia. When Virginia played NC State last year, and we all collectively thought when they didn't foul and when they got beat in overtime and lost to NC State, we're like, that's it, they're done. Well, maybe they should have been. Like, maybe we should have put stock into that. But instead,
we were
forced to watch, honestly, the worst. I think it was the worst first four game I've ever seen. And I've watched a lot of bad. It was terrible.
The last game that Tony Bennett coached. I mean, that was it for him. That was his last game as a head coach. So, without a doubt, I would have much rather have seen one of the Big East teams that got left on the wrong side of the bubble get in over Virginia. But here's the thing that people have to realize is that when you've got 30-plus points of data on a team, a two-game stay in a conference tournament is only a fraction of what the committee is basing their assessment on. So it's like the data is in the barn. The hay is in the barn this week for the most part. Memphis, I believe, though, is a team that has a lot of potential variance. I'm not saying that a loss tomorrow against Wichita State is going to change their seed line by two seeds or whatever. But we don't know how the committee views Memphis because there's so many different ways that you could view Memphis. Their resume is unorthodox. So in my mind, I'm thinking they run the table this week. They win three games by double digits, add an AAC tournament title to their AAC regular season title. I'm not dismissing the possibility of a five seed, right? But at the same time, I understand there's going to be some bracketologists out there, if they lose tomorrow, going to be like, oh, no, Memphis is a nine, right? So it's just how do you view them? I mean, it's like the ultimate mystery. I think probably one of the most intriguing seed lines of anybody in the country on Sunday is going to be Memphis and what they decide to do with a resume that is unlike any other in college basketball right now.
I think I'd make the argument it is the most intriguing, correct?
Gonzaga. I mean, Memphis and Gonzaga are the two most intriguing because Gonzaga is like the opposite of Memphis. They have very few quad one victories relative to Memphis anyway. Bad winning percentage in quad one, especially relative to Memphis. But, you know, Net, KenPom, Bart Torvik, right? Like, they all love them. So how do you evaluate that team versus a team that actually beat teams that are good in Memphis's case, which, yeah, it's the debate we've been having for months. And now we're 3 days away from finding out the answers.
Well, and then that brings up the other question, though, that I have. I know the Net and metrics largely influences how we talk about the sport. And I get it. And I'm not even saying like it's right, it's wrong. I'm not making a moral judgment. I have a sneaky suspicion that the metric that's actually going to matter is going to be WOB. And for those that have no idea, it's wins over bubble. And as Cobb said to me off the air, whoo boy, good luck explaining that to people, what it means. And I'm not even going to try to explain the formula. Here's all I'll tell you. Unlike Net, which is still a predictive metric, WOB is more resume. Like the closest equivalent is what ESPN does with strength of record. And I will also point this out. I trust it more because, Cobb, it was written by a gambler.
I mean, those dudes know what they're doing.
Yeah. And honestly, it's like, hey, man, they're like trying to get it right. And so the reason why I bring that up is I believe Memphis fans are going to be pleasantly surprised on Sunday.
I mean, if it's going off a WOB, Jeffrey, they'd be a five.
Yeah, and you could tell me, like, you could tell me if they make it to Sunday, because that's the other thing. I really believe, setting aside for fans, like, hey, you're there, you want to see your team win. Like, I get that. But the Tigers, if they make it to Sunday, will be playing the last game of the day. And basically that game ends in what? An hour later we have the selection show. So
yeah, well, they'll have contingency brackets. They'll have like a, hey, if Memphis wins, maybe they're the 22nd overall seed. If Memphis loses, maybe they're the 26th overall seed.
Yeah, and I believe that it won't matter. Like, their bracket's going to be done. And that's
you don't think the committee would like to punish Memphis for another quad three loss?
Well, it's possible if they played North Texas, because I think North Texas is hovering around 50. Let me pull it up.
Well, shoot, that could end up being a quad one.
That's also what I'm saying.
There's going to be a lot of Memphis fans across college basketball these next few days. You know why, right? Because it's like the AAC, it's a one-bid league unless somebody other than Memphis wins the conference tournament, in which case it's a two-bid league, in which case a bubble team somewhere out there gets booted from the field. So, yeah, you're going to see a lot of Tigers fans popping up around college basketball.
Well, then, like, but that's also the weird thing. It's like, if you're the league, aren't you really pulling against Memphis?
That's true. You want to be a multi-bid league.
Yeah, I mean, like, and that's really the only path. So, like, when I say the conference tournament in terms of, like, is it meaningless? I mean more in the sense of, like, people that think, like, you can just erase the whole year based on what happens this week. And to me, it's like, what it's really been is, okay, for teams that needed a mulligan because they screwed up the season, it's another chance. NC State's the perfect example last year. You screwed it up last year, but you were a good team. You got hot, and then you earned your spot, and then you eventually earn your way to the Final Four. But, like, I think really the only thing that actually matters is how many bid thieves are there going to be out there? Because that does impact everything, because now you're starting to push teams down. Like, I do acknowledge that.
There are not going to be nearly as many as there were last year. I think there were five last year, five teams that won conference tournaments that turned either turned a one-bid league into a two-bid league, or in the case of NC State, just got you another team out of the ACC that you weren't going to get. For teams on the bubble, like, it's been a good championship week so far, for the most part. Memphis losing Friday or Saturday could kind of change that a little bit, but I think the AAC is probably the league that's most ripe for a bid thief. You could look at the Big East and say, what if Villanova comes out of there? Or maybe you want to classify Xavier as a bid thief. But by and large, the teams that you see on the bubble now, I think, have a really good chance of being in the field, which is why it's so fascinating. Like, what happens with North Carolina, man? Because Cooper Flagg, I don't know if you saw, but that he gets wheeled off the court today.
Duke is so dramatic. God, they're so dramatic.
Hey, I do think it was worse than the Kyle Filipowski court storming injury. Oh, speaking of Kyle Filipowski, shout out to him. Right,
last night.
I was worried when the Jazz tried out a lineup, a starting five that has Walker Kessler and Lauri Markkanen in it. They're bringing Kyle Filipowski off the bench and Jaren Jackson Jr. ended up playing. So I'm like, how's this going to go on the boards? Anyway, they survived that. But
I think the other problem, George, correct me if I'm wrong, was Brandon Clark the tallest player on the floor for the Grizzlies at that point?
Probably.
I think the closing lineup, Brandon Clark was the tallest. If it felt like Utah got every offensive rebound, they did.
Closing? Edie was out there for a stretch towards the end.
But I think really like that stretch, like the last 5 minutes, I think Brandon was the tallest guy.
Probably.
Well, you know, I mean, Utah's got a monopoly on the tall whites.
Yeah.
So you just know that you're going to have to deal with a strong contingent of tall whites whenever you play Utah.
And then they're going to try to add another one.
Well, I mean, it depends. I mean, how do they view Zach Edey? Because you could potentially trade Zach Edey, I mean, to Utah and get a huge haul in return, depending on, I mean, he's Canadian. I don't know if they'll hold that against
him. Yeah, and I don't know if you count halfies. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
I mean,
it's an interesting culture.
They want Flag. Like, Flag. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, that's what they want. That's the one they want.
I mean, they're going to be in the mix for him, right? Isn't it the top four? Is the top four or five in the lottery all have the same odds of getting number one?
So now it's top three, but they shrank. The top three all have a 14% chance of getting it. Then it's like 12.5, and then it like shrinks by a percent and a half, maybe.
So if you're a Jazz fan, you're glad you lost last night because you just got to solidify your place in that Flag sweepstakes. You don't need to see your team win right now.
Yeah, I think if you're a Jazz fan, you're just like, wake me up at the lottery. Because, like, at least, like I don't know. Like, this is, to me, it's a lot like last year watching the Grizzlies. Like, you just kept thinking to yourself, like, what's the point? Like, I had to do it for my job, but you're just like, everybody was hurt. You had a revolving door of like G League, two way, like I mean I hesitate to even say like 4A type players because I don't even know if like some of those guys I don't even know if they like stick around in the G League.
Which is interesting though, because you did get, I mean, it was beneficial from the standpoint of GG Jackson and Vince Williams getting some run. Which brings me to a point that I had, which do we have Eric? Eric's coming up.
Eric's
right?
coming up next.
Yeah, so like I'll probably ask him about this. But the fact that GG has started over Vince Williams the last couple games, I find interesting.
So, you're right. It's something to ask Eric, but I do think a big part of it has been Gigi's, or a bigger part, Vince is only really at 88%, or 80%, right. He's what he said. And when you watch him, he doesn't look right. But then I think also the idea is, all right, we're going to just kind of have people slotted in the spot that they view him. And so I think they view him as that guy off the bench playing that. It's almost like instead of just bumping him up for the sake of winning the game, it's, all right, let's keep him in the role that he's going to be in, and then we'll sub in Gigi to try to get some length and athleticism.
It's probably good for Gigi's mentals to like get the starts to be like, okay, like, you know, they believe in me, right? Because he was kind of down. He gave Drew some quotes not too long ago, I think, about, you know, he was just kind of going through it a little bit as a young second year guy, trying to find his place, trying to find his home in the rotation. So, I mean, I'm not mad to see him get some starts. It's just, I thought it was confusing because I was like, huh, interesting that they would start Gigi over Vince.
And I mean, honestly, like, and Vince hasn't played that well. I mean, that's another part of it. Like, you know, I mean, he clearly is gutting it out. And so how much of his form is based on how he looks. Okay. The other things that I wanted to get into with you, as we're watching, well, I guess I'll say this. Do you have anything else college basketball specific that you want to talk about right now?
Well, geez, Arkansas's up one with 50 seconds left.
50.5. Right, Arkansas went on a little 6-0 run. I mean, it's been a great game, but it's also kind of been a weird game. It's like Ole Miss dominated the first half, then Arkansas really dominated the second half up until about the under 8 timeout, and then Ole Miss like had a furious run, and now Arkansas is responding, and now it's just kind of been like a back and forth game.
Arkansas has no idea how to play with a lead. Next time you see Arkansas with a lead, go and hammer the money line of the opposing team. That would be my advice.
Yesterday was bananas.
They went almost 12 minutes without a field goal.
I mean, that was unbelievable.
Had they blown that, they very well may have ended up on the wrong side of the bubble, and that would have put John Calipari at 1-7 in his last 8 postseason games as a college basketball coach. And, I mean, I wouldn't wish that on anyone, but also it would kind of be hilarious. Real quick, you asked me if I had anything to add about college basketball. Jeffrey, did you catch wind of this yesterday? In that game, Arkansas is up 3 with about 2.8 seconds
left. Yeah, so the clip that's going around from Cal?
Yeah, so he had one, John L. Davis had one free throw left. He makes the free throw. They're up 4. You win the game because you're up 4. There is no such thing as a 4-point shot in basketball. I don't know if you know that. But apparently John Calipari doesn't, because he told John L. Davis to miss the free throw, thus giving South Carolina a chance to tie the game. And thankfully, John L. Davis accidentally banked it in. But Cal is kind of getting roasted around the sport right now, and rightfully so, because, I mean, math? I mean, come on, dude. Like, what? Why would you have your team miss a free throw when they're up 3? That's insanity.
There are actually people that will do it. You know what the problem that I had with it? The point of it is you can't clear out the rebounders. Like, the idea would be, if you're going to do that, you have to have somebody, and what you're trying to do is you're trying to have somebody tip the ball so the clock starts.
Yes.
And then,
yes.
I mean, while there is technically no such thing as a 4-point shot, theoretically, you get the ball, call timeout, heave it to half court or whatever, call timeout, and draw a 4-point play. Like, that's what you could try to do. Man, this is a heck of a game. Ole Miss just... Arkansas gets a 3-point lead. Ole Miss quickly down the floor. Now they've got an and-1. They're down 80-79. But there are basketball people that will tell you, under X amount of time, missing the free throw is not a bad strategy, because whoever's going to wind up with the ball is usually going to be a big, and so it's not going to be a shot maker. And then but my point is, you have to have rebounders down there to try to start the clock early. When you're clearing out the lane, that's the problem. But I mean, in general, my other thing is, like, why not try to make it? And if you miss it, okay, so be it. But like, to me, like, that's just the ultimate. If you make it, fine. You're up 4. And if you miss, have somebody try to start the clock.
I understand trying to miss when you're up 1. Because if you miss up 1, then they've got to collect the rebound, take a couple dribbles, and then a 3-point shot's going to beat you whether you're up 1 or whether you're up 2. But it's going to be a whole lot easier to get a whole lot tougher to get a good look off of a miss than off of a make. So the whole thing was just... confounding. And it was kind of an example to me of why Cal might need to go for a youth movement on his bench. I mean, he's kind of just run it back with the old crew, right? Like Kenny Payne and some of these guys who have been with him for a long time. He's loyal, which is a great attribute until you're too loyal, and then it's a flaw. But you got to have somebody with a little mathematical sense. I mean, basic common knowledge on your bench to say, hey, this isn't what we should do, man. Like, anyway, Arkansas won
this
in
game
in spite of itself here.
But
yesterday,
that was a weird. They got a pretty good call. That looked like pretty good defense as Ole Miss was trying to make a layup. Although it's
people are shrieking all around me right now. So
he just
something must have just happened.
So he just missed one free throw. You're obviously going to be ahead because we have cable here. So you're at least going to be at the minimum 8 seconds ahead. But we're watching Brazil or. Brazil, how do you say it?
Brazil, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, here it goes.
So he missed the first is what we're watching in real time.
I got Sean Padula with a go-ahead three, half-court shot from Billy Richmond at the buzzer. No good. Ole Miss wins 83-80.
So Padula hits a three is what we'll be watching next. Okay, so yeah, miss, here it is. Padula goes down the floor, pulls up from the hash mark. We know this is good, 1.3. And now the half-court heave. I don't even know if it would have counted. It almost went in. It was banked. I don't know if it would have counted. Okay, so anything else you want to close the book college basketball-wise?
No, sorry. I just had to throw that out there about Cal.
No, I mean, if they would have had a rebounder, I wouldn't have that big of a deal with it. But the fact that, like, you were allowing them to get a free rebound, I'm with you. Just make the free throw. All right. Here, let's get to the Grizzlies, because I had this thought. So, we know Jaren is a great defender. But I honestly think, watching the team without him on the floor, he should always win Defensive Player of the Year. In fact, he might win Defensive Player of the Universe of all time. Because when he's on the floor, they are actually a good defense. When he is off the floor, Cobb, they might be bottom of the league bad. Like, they cannot get any stops. And really, the only thing you're really changing, I know some people say, well, Santi, but it's like, okay, all of us, are we putting Santi into the great defender category?
No. I mean, he's okay.
He had some length.
Yeah.
But, like, to me, it's almost like Jaren. This is the case for Jaren being Defensive Player of the Year is just the Grizzlies without Jaren.
No, that's it. Because the alternatives are, there's such a drop off. The replacement is, but Jaren Jackson Jr. is so good in the sense that he can block shots, he can protect the rim. He's also great as that sort of roving defender off the ball, can come over from the blind side and erase a shot. And then if you try to put him in a pick and roll, he's actually got the agility to switch out onto the guard. And the rest of the Grizzlies bigs don't have both those things. They don't have both the rim protection and the switchability. Zach Edey has the rim protection. He does not have the switchability. Brandon Clark has the switchability but doesn't have the rim protection. Jay Huff has a little. I mean,
he has a little.
Depends,
he has
right?
a little rim protection. The problem is, you can just body him.
Right. So I wouldn't necessarily view him as a plus in either on the perimeter or as a rim protector. He has his moments. Don't get me wrong.
No,
like,
he's a pretty good shot blocker. The problem is, you can bully him
over the course of a 20-minute run for him off the bench. Like the generally speaking, the net defensive rating isn't going to be great.
Yeah.
So. That's the problem. Is like it's the multifaceted versatility of what Jaren brings you defensively is not matched even in the slightest by anyone else on the roster.
Well, I think honestly, it's where like the loss of Tillman is obvious because while Tillman is like a fringe rotation player, he's still the drop off from him defensively was still enough. Like he was a good enough defender that when Jaren wasn't on the floor, it wasn't as eye popping. But now. When Jaren is not on the floor, you are just going like, I just hope to God they can outscore them. And that was the other big takeaway for me last night was, I don't know why there's been this rush to trade Kennard. Like, I get it, whatever his contract's expiring. But y'all, this team does not have shooters. He is a proven entity of shooting. And thank God they didn't trade him last night, because they don't win that game without him.
No doubt. And like, I see this narrative out there about, oh man, well, Luke Kennard's only good against bad teams. Okay, I mean, last night, sure, like, he has his best game of the year against a bad team. One, you need these victories against bad teams. Like, it's a useful skill to have.
100%.
I mean, right now, this four-game winning streak, where are the Grizzlies right now if they go 500? I mean, we're having an alarm type of conversation if they're 2-2 over their last four and lost last night, but they're 4-0 over their last four. They've been able to beat bad teams. If Luke Kennard helps you with that, then so be it. That's not a bad thing. But also, by the same token, he had 22 in that big win over Houston on January 30th. He had 19 at Cleveland on February 23rd. He had 17 in a win at Phoenix, which, I mean, Phoenix isn't great, but, like, you're on the road against a team that has good talent, at least. And then 16 against Oklahoma City on December 29th. So, like, there have been plenty of moments this season where he's giving you something against a good opponent. I mean, is he a computer tricker and somebody who plays his best against bad teams? Yeah, everybody plays better against bad teams,
because,
right?
Yeah, I mean, it's just, like, that's the other thing. It's, like, it's harder. Like, you know who hasn't played great against good teams this year also? John Morant.
Yeah, like, literally every basketball player ever plays better against bad teams than against good teams.
Well, and to your other point, though, like, I'm of the opinion, because I totally agree with you on this. The Grizzlies are 4-0, and I do not feel like you felt good about any of the wins. Like, you can enjoy them. Like, hey, you better to win than lose. But it's not like you've left going, I feel completely different about this team in the playoffs based on what we watched these four games. But what is key is, now to your point, if they would have gone 2-2 in that stretch, they're probably behind Houston and they're in fifth. But because they've gone 4-0, they're tied for second. And when you look at the way the schedule breaks out, they basically now have, I think last night was 17 remaining, so I believe they'd have 16 remaining, right? Because they're now 42-24. So that would put them at 66, and they have 16 remaining. Last night was one of five games against dreadful teams. And they have six games starting tomorrow night against good teams. But four of those games against the good teams are at home. And then you also have kind of the, you've got, I think that would put it at another 12. I think that would put it at four other games against the middle of the pack. So, handle your business at home, and in those six games where you're playing teams like the Jazz, you just win those games. If you win those games, I don't care if it's a work of art, whatnot, this is where you being so far ahead and having a better start to the year is going to benefit you in the standings, because you had a buffer and you were able to withstand that period of bad basketball. And hopefully, as you know, this gives you these four wins, allows you to not have to, like, 100% rush Jaren back because, okay, we're trying to, like, that gave you a little bit of cover.
This past week, I mean, it cannot be overstated how critical literally the wins are.
Yes.
Is the aesthetics of the way it's getting done encouraging? No. But had you gone 1-3 over these last four, I mean, it was borderline panic mode on here last week going into this stretch.
Did they have a comfortable win? What was Monday? Was Monday Suns? Yeah, Monday was Suns because of Durant, right? So that game could have gone. Durant had a three to win.
Let's be real. The Grizzlies were due to start winning some of these close
games.
Yeah,
I mean, that is kind of like you lost a bunch of close ones, and like it was gonna even out. But that game wasn't comfortable. Last night was not comfortable.
The win over Dallas was an 11-point win. So
yeah, but remember that was an 11-point win where I think the game was tied with like 2 minutes. It's like one of the greatest stories and great moments in covering. Like, literally the Grizz like went on an 11-0 run to cover in 90 seconds. And then I guess the New Orleans game was...
It was a 3-point game.
Yeah, no, that game wasn't comfortable either.
Well, Zion didn't play in that game.
Yeah.
You beat Phoenix at home, you beat a bad Jazz team, and then you beat injury-plagued Dallas, which
Correct.
Is just completely done. So none of these victories are like, oh, look at, you know, there's nothing. The wins are so important, because I was on here last week telling you, Jeffrey, I'm worried that they're headed to the play-in.
Yeah.
I was legitimately concerned about that. And had they gone 1-3 or 2-2 over those four, we'd be having that conversation today. Thankfully, we are not. Barely. hopefully, my hope is that this four-game stretch has brought John Morant some confidence.
I like
he's finally been in the lineup.
I like his attitude better. I think he's been less of a drag on all his teammates. And he even made comments to Tim McMahon and to Harrington last Friday. Like, I recognize that was putting my teammates in a bad spot. That was a good thing to hear. But there's also the reality of like, all right, Josh playing well. What happens when he's not? All right, let's talk about that.
It's just good to see him get some confidence.
I think the biggest development of this week is Ja's attitude. All right, we got to take a quick break. When we come back, we will talk to Eric about all things Grizzlies. Also, Tony Allen Week continues. We'll do that with Eric next, right here on Jeff Wright and Company, 92.9 FM. Yes.
Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
And now, two pigeons who can't believe how good humans have it with DirecTV.
These humans are hopping from streaming apps to live sports without batting a wing.
All from the DirecTV home screen.
With just one click, you could be watching a baseball game, a movie on Netflix,
or a critically acclaimed documentary.
You watch documentaries?
I love the ones that leave you with a question.
What?
Exactly.
DirecTV, a better way to watch whatever you want to watch. Visit DirecTV.com.
Internet-connected Gemini device, separate Netflix membership, and additional paid subscriptions required for third-party apps.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it. That's why I go for a five-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or whenever my favorite team is playing late. 5-Hour Energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before tip-off.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That music means we welcome the Memphis Grizzlies Radio Network play-by-play announcer to the program. He, of course, is Eric Hasseltine, kind enough to join us each and every Thursday. Eric, I was asking Cobb this, so I want to get your take on it as well. Honestly, is the case for Jaren Jackson a defensive player of the year? Just look at what the Grizzlies have been ever since he's gone, ever since he's been hurt.
Man, that's a great question. I think it's pretty obvious how important he is to the Grizzlies defensively. But with that said, you know, that's when you play a certain way also all year, and what Jaren gives you is the ability to really extend out on the perimeter. I was talking about this with one of the guys, I'm trying to think of who it was that recently came in, and we were talking about how you can extend your, I think it was Tim Kempton from the Suns, how he allows you to extend your pressure on the perimeter, to gamble a little bit more, to press out, allow Zach to be big down low because, you know, here's this, you know, 7 foot tall, 7 foot five wingspan, you know, aggressive shot blocker just roaming, waiting for you to think you can get that shot away. And him to prove you completely wrong. And then that allows you to play a certain way. And then when it's all of a sudden just out of nowhere gone, changes things and changes a lot. So, I think you can make a case for Dyson Daniels. You can make a case for Evan Mobley. But if anybody had any doubt, Jaren Jackson Jr. has won it before. I think he may overall, despite the fact the block numbers are lower and the stocks numbers is which I'll be honest with you, I despise that steals. And he's got stocks. Okay, come on, stop.
Yeah, thank you for being the hero.
Stop it. But I get it. It's a world of analytics and numbers, and that's the way we live. I don't care if you block one shot or four. I don't care if you get three steals or one. If you impact the game defensively by changing shots, by making people do things that they're not comfortable with, by making teams change what they're doing or how they're attacking, to me, that is the mark of a good defender. Rest in peace, Jeff Weinberger, who used to be on another station, used to always talk about plastic points, which I used to always laugh. He's like, they're plastic points. They don't mean anything. You get 8 points in the last minute of a game, and when the game's over. He had a point, but you still got to make shots, to me, to get to, to get to 24 points a game if you're scoring 4 points in 5 minutes of time when the game's over. So what? You still got to do it. And you had to get to 20 before that, so you're still pretty good. But I do think there's something on the defensive end when people just get caught up in numbers. Now, Wembanyama blocking four shots a game, yeah, except for when do they happen? So let's go back to here's a perfect example. Victor Wembanyama blocks, what, 7, 8 shots in the first half against the Grizzlies?
It felt like 15.
Yeah, it felt like 15, but the Grizzlies never changed what they were doing. And then they just did it a little bit differently and set a bigger screen, and he didn't have another block the rest of the night. And the Grizzlies just carved through that defense. Now, whatever reason that was, it's still impressive to block 8 shots. And to block 4 a game is not easy. I'm not knocking that. But when you block 2 or 3 in the first quarter, what are you doing in the fourth quarter? What I see in Jaren Jackson, and I obviously have the opportunity to see him play all of his games, when it gets down to crunch time, you don't go anywhere near him. Like, teams are saying, we ain't going at that guy. No chance. We're not. That is not the angle we want to pursue. And for the Grizzlies, thankfully, they have a guy in Brandon Clark who has elevated his game. We talked to him about it last night defensively, where he has now been on the ball on multiple game-winning or last-second shot tries, and they haven't gone. And he's been right there, and he's been in front of them and kept guys – from getting to their desired spots. And, obviously Jaren hasn't been there last week, but go back to those game-winning shots against Minnesota. They're not going at Jaren. They're going to try their hand with Brandon, and Jaren hedges on a screen. We're not going that way. We're going to come back out here. Okay, now we've wasted 4 seconds. That's the impact he has. And Brandon is playing at a higher level because of it. And Ja, realizing, hey, I'm quick enough to get a steal a game. I remember him saying that in the beginning of the year, hey, I'm capable of getting a steal per game and getting in there. And you see how Scotty, like last night, dives into a ball handler, doesn't commit a foul, just takes it away. In a game where it felt like the Grizzlies got a big lead and they got a little complacent. They're like, all right, Utah's at the end of a trip. It's natural to think we're done. We got these guys. And they dug in. I gave the Jazz a lot of credit for that. I also was terrified because I mentioned in the little thing on the Jumbotron that the Jazz were 1-40 when going into the fourth quarter behind on the scoreboard. And I said, let me repeat that, 1-40. You want to play from ahead. Like, don't sleep on these guys. Get the lead was what I meant. The Jazz mentioned that on their radio broadcast. They're like, oh, yeah, the radio announcer for the Grizzlies talked about this. And so let's see if we can mount a comeback and make him eat crow. And I was just like, please don't blow this.
That too, Bruce.
That was like the biggest fool. I'm running a baseball camp today, and I got a parent go, I saw you last night, and I thought you jinxed him with that 1-40 comment. I'm like, yeah, you and me both. Now pay up for your kids.
Yeah. Your price just went up. Also,
that's $3 a swipe on that card, man. Thank you very much. I'm kidding.
Cobb, no, seriously. But Eric, you made me, when you said plastic points with Weinberger,
yeah,
Cobb, I think I might have – I just had an epiphany. I think I know why I hate players that put up empty stats. I think it's Jeff Weinberger. Like, literally, like I grew up listening to him.
I mean, what a pool.
Like, I mean,
the Eric, class, like you have the best pools, man.
Yeah.
Like, last week you were talking about Gene Hackman as Avery Tolar in The Firm. And then today you're busting out Jeff Weinberger references. I mean, my gosh, your memory is like a steel trap.
One of my all-time favorite Weinbergers I'll never forget. Eli Manning's the sixth best quarterback in the SEC West. We'll take your calls after this. We'll take your calls after this. That was a pro.
I got there, and so I remember, if we're just going to do a little quick reminiscing down memory lane, I get there. My first week here in Memphis, where the Grizzlies are new, and he's talking about, like, Powell's got this nice little up and under move, and I'm like, thinking to myself, I'm like, how the hell have you seen this guy play? He plays in Barcelona, and he barely played. And he's like, you know, because he was always watching film. And so
Grinder,
LeBron's coming
guy.
On the scene. So, yeah. So, like, first year, second year, we're in our third year. It's LeBron's year, right?
Yep.
So, Yao was the next year's first round, number one pick, and LeBron's coming. And he looks at me dead square in the eye, and he goes, there are two players in Mississippi that are better than LeBron James.
Yes!
He can't shoot. He can't shoot. And I said, Jeff,
yes,
I love you. Like, we've become good friends. I love you to death. You are absolutely out of your mind insane on this. I said, that young man is 6 feet, 8 inches tall, 240 pounds, and I'll bet if you time his 40, it comes in at 4'5". I'm like, who are these two Mississippi guys you're talking about? He goes, Travis Outlaw and Al Jefferson, both pros. And I said, okay, both will go in the NBA. They are not LeBron James, I guarantee you. I said, if you're telling me he can't shoot, I'm telling you an NBA coach, I've seen his form on his jumper, is going to make him a better shooter, and he is going to be an absolute monster in this league based on what I've seen. Now he's all flash, and I'm like, oh, man, why didn't you live long enough to see this? Because I would have loved it.
No.
And he did admit later, and, you know, rest his soul. He was such a fun guy to be around. And then with Jack, because Jack would just push his buttons, another rest your soul, and he was talking one day, just talking up Wayne Madkin, who was quarterback at Mississippi State. And I met Wayne, and I'm like, yo, dude, like, there was a radio host here who used to just get under his partner's skin talking about how much he loved you. And I said, it made for great radio. So they were fun, man. It's all part of the memory. So, I think about those things, you know, people have said, and, you know, when we talk about these players that we have and the way we look at them and how different it is now when, you know, people would talk, you think about Allen Iverson, and Allen Iverson wasn't going to change the way he played. I actually had somebody come up to me and say, do you think Vince Carter is an actual Hall of Famer when he's here? I said, are you out of your mind? The man changed the game. I said, yeah. He goes, well, you know, look at this, look at that. And he changed the way he played, and his numbers went down. I said, yeah, and he's going to play 20 years because of it. You know, of course he's a Hall of Famer. And we just get caught up in these things. And I think that's where Jaren may take some hits, bringing it all back around is, you know, people are like, oh, he's only got 1.6 blocks a game. There's other guys like, this guy's got 2.4, and this guy's got 2.5. I'm like, okay, great. He changes the game defensively. The numbers are there. And when Mark won his Defensive Player of the Year, was I thought the first real time we saw a metrically generated you know, view of a guy, of what the team was defensively when he was there and what it wasn't, and how he impacted the game, even though his rebounding numbers weren't off the charts. His steal numbers weren't off the charts. The block numbers weren't off the charts, but he impacted the game. And I think that does. That is where analytics to me can have a place. Where analytics doesn't have a place is like, you should never take a mid-range 15-footer. I'm like, yeah, tell that to the Oklahoma City Thunder because they look pretty good doing it. And they're the best team in the league right now, along with Cleveland, who also, by the way, embraces the mid-range game because if you're in the NBA and you can make a 15-footer, you should. Because it's 2 points, and if you're really good, you're going to make that shot.
And people aren't defending it anymore.
No, that's the thing. Everybody just runs to the three-point line. I've seen watching games just, you know, kind of doing that playoff thing lately. I watch fast breaks, and a guy's running with two guys on the wing, and I'm looking around, I'm like, where'd the other two guys go? And I'm like, did they run into the stands? They're in the corner.
Yeah.
And now it's a one-on-two, and you're hoping to make a pass, and teams now are going, all right, if you're behind the play – in the fast break and you're not in, it's a 3-on-2, but you're trailing, don't run for the ball and try to get the rebound. Just sprint to the corner. Just sprint to the corner as fast as you can. I've seen more corner threes in transition blocked by a trail guy this year than I can remember because that's now the norm. I'm like, do the abnormal. When you're down one, take an easy layup. Take a two. Take a two. It's okay. It turns out points are good. The more you score, the better.
Eric, I was going to tell you, Pete also made the reference to the fact that the Jazz had just once all season when trailing after three quarters. So had it happened, the blame would not have been entirely on your shoulders for that.
So I guess really what we're saying is this is actually Ross Wooden's fault. Did he give you? Did he give you all the note?
He was no, I did it. So that's okay. Ross works with them. He'll work with me when he's not doing TV. But that's one of the things I put on all my boards. Like on the back of my board,
yeah.
I think I've shown
when trailing, yeah.
I put all the superlatives, what they are against the West, what they are on the road, what they are after three quarters when they shoot 45% or better. And I always love guys going, hey, no kidding, Captain, obviously you make 45%. Well, the other team, if they make 45%, then someone's going to lose. So if you're shooting 45%, what's your record? Of course, when you get into the 50s, your record's going to be really good. You shot 50%.
Last night was a perfect example of what you're saying. The Jazz shot 47%. Grizzlies shot 47%. Yeah.
Right. And you won the game. So I look at that. I look at record when leading going to the fourth or tied. And there's all kinds of things you can throw out there. But, you know, to me, those things are that's how you prepare. And Ross is really good. And Pete is, and I don't think Ross handed in that. Pete has like a book of notes because it's TV and you have to be able to add things in there. So I would 100% blamed him. I was more concerned with the call when Luke's three went. I can never remember seeing a ball go almost 360, hit the back of hit the back part of the iron, like that back iron that's got that little square,
yep.
Almost seemingly sit on it for like a split second and not come out. Like, I've never seen it go in. I'm like, that was high drama because I'm seeing the shot and it leaves Luke's hands and you're like, oh, that's just money. And then it just catches the inner half and it rims. And that's our job to describe, where Pete's like going, you know, telling a number because the TV will describe what you just saw. And so, and then he'll bring the intensity with it because they do a great job. And so,
It's funny you mentioned that play because Jeff asked me, he's like, when Luke had that shot, did you think he made it? And I was like, well, when it left his hand, I thought it was in. And then when it rattled,
every shot he takes.
Yeah. When it rattled in and out, I was like, oh, and then I was like, he missed it. And then it hits the iron again. And you're like, oh, he missed it twice somehow. And then it goes in. And it's funny enough, we played your highlight and you can even tell you had this, like you could feel the moment. You're like, right when he released it, you're like, you were ready just to explode, bring it up. And then you're like, iron and it's good. Bring it up. Put it through on the board.
And that's like, I think I said that was high drama.
Yeah. Yes.
High intensity there.
But, it was.
because it was a big shot. And then, you know, you needed that three. And then
you needed the 4-point play. And even when he got the 4-point play, I still didn't feel good about it.
It was wild. So, Luke's one of those guys, and Dez now. It's so nice to have two guys that when they take a three, you're just like, that's good. You know, you just feel, you know, he's going to miss at least half of them, but you feel like it's got a chance just about every time. And it was good to see him get back on track. You know, no matter what the opponent, I love people just going, oh, you just beat the Jazz. I'm like, yeah, they didn't pick up those jerseys at Walmart, gang. Like, these guys are NBA players. They're not having a good year. But guys like Kyle Filipowski, Isaiah Collier, these guys that are young that are saying, hey, we're going to help bring this back around. And then Colin Sexton, and I'm trying to remember, I heard the PTSD comment today or something, you know, where Ja's just so tired of getting hit. And I don't think I didn't think it was as bad as Ja did, but I also didn't get hit below the belt. Like, I don't care who you are, you get hit in the, what are they, the lower abdomen, as they used to say on the wrestling shows, or the, you know.
Or is hockey, lower body injury?
Lower body injury, yeah, right? So getting hit in the spot no man wants to get hit in, whether how hard it is, you're going to get pissed. You're going to get angry. And so, it was interesting. They brought that back around. And I also think at that time was part frustration because they were executing and shots just weren't going. And then you push a little harder and you're not going to let this one slip away, except you are letting it slip away. And, you know, the resiliency was good. It was good to see them, you know, a couple nights in a row now go down to the wire and pull one out when you think back, because it's always revisionist history. Oh, man, what if they would have just won one of those games against Brooklyn? Well, they didn't, and the Nets also just beat the Lakers. What if they would have just beaten Chicago? Well, they didn't, and the Bulls have beaten people. And what if they would have held on against the Clippers in December? Well, they didn't, and other teams have blown 20-point leads, too. It happens to everyone, which is why when that three-game losing streak happened, yeah, there was reason for concern, but there wasn't reason to hit the self-destruct button and, you know, send out the troops to clear everybody out and let's evacuate the building either. So, you know, it's just kind of how we go as a fan base and in the entire league. And I get it, man. You know, I believe it or not, in Oklahoma City, I heard people talking like, man, they're good, but they got to really work on their defense. And I about spit my beer on the guy because I'm like, are you out of your mind? Like, go look at the numbers. They're like on every
They're like the best defensive team I've ever seen.
Yeah, they're like, I'm like, what are you talking about? Yeah, but late in games when they're up by 8, they tend to get scored on and the opponents are shooting 62%. I'm like, you are reading way too much into this. They are going to win a lot the way they play. And that's okay, you know, but that's part of being a fan and it's fun. So it's, you know, as we've always said, that we're not doing this to, you know, to solve the world's problems. We're doing this to have fun and we're enjoying basketball to have fun. And, you know, it's great to be passionate. I don't understand fans that can't enjoy when their teams win, even if they win. I'd be like, hey, they won. Great. It's a great night. Nah, man, they got to do this. They got to do that. Like you've got to like take a breath. Take a breath and figure something out how to enjoy the joys in life, because trust me, there's a lot of things that can lead you to go, man, this really isn't fun and this really isn't a good time, and that's not when your teams are doing well or thriving or winning.
All right, Eric, what do we make of GG Jackson getting a couple of starts here? Is he auditioning for something, or is it just kind of a matter of, hey, we got some guys out of the lineup, making their way back into the lineup, give the young pup some reps?
I think it's getting him back into his groove, trying to get him comfortable, seeing where he fits best, like what rotations he plays in. The length, the athleticism never hurts. And you know, seeing where it is. And if it's a team that's going to play smaller, we saw Vince in the starting lineup. It's those guys figuring out how they fit with new teammates because they haven't had a lot of time on the court. They're both under 20 games played. And so, you know, that was the learning curve for the group out there. We're now in game what? We're going to be in game 67 Friday night. And other guys have played 45, 50, 60, 65 games, whatever it is. You know, Jaren had only missed 2 before this ankle injury. But they played together. And, you know, I was talking with Taylor about that, you know, and Coach was saying, you know, yeah, this is part of it. When you have injuries, when you have guys coming back, our guys returning, our guys helping out because we have an open roster spot because of the, you know, releasing Johnny Davis and you bring back Lamar Stevens. He never played with Zach Edey. He's never really played with Ja Morant. He's never played with all of these guys. Like Dez was out for most of it. That it's a different scenario. Scotty's the same way. Gigi's the same way. Gigi never really played with Ja, and Vince never really played with Ja. And that's a big difference. And it's a big difference not having played with Dez or Brandon, really. That's a whole different animal. The one guy they'd all played with is now on the shelf, you know? Yep. And so you got to build that, and you got to build that trust, and you can see it sometimes in games when defensive breakdowns happen. And I for all the heat the young man has taken, I'm going to throw some praise at Ja Morant. And it's not because he does things other humans can't do. It's not the spectacular shots. It's not the dunks. It's not the no-look passes. The last 3 games I've seen him, when a defensive breakdown has happened, he has gone to a guy in a leadership fashion, not chewing them up and down, saying, hey, you have got to be here. Not like patty caking him on the back, going, hey, it's okay, little buddy. Like, we'll be fine. He's like, you have to be.
Think warm. Think palm trees. Think baseball. Hi, I'm MLB.com's Matt Monaghan. The long, dark freeze is over, and spring training is finally here. If you're a baseball fan looking for a quick, easy way to get all the scores, top stories, and best sound bites from Florida and Arizona, you're in luck.
I don't think people realize how good we are. I don't even know if we realize how good.
The Morning Lineup Podcast, a short, less than 10-minute baseball highlight show, is available anywhere on any platform you listen to podcasts on, 5 days a week. We can't wait to meet you there.